All right, guys, we're back. Mark Brooks here, Quality at Bats Academy. We're visited by Bobby Tewksbury. Bobby, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining.
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So we're really excited to have you on. Spring and I have been trying to get you on for the longest time, so really glad to have you here to talk some hitting. So what I wanted to do is, you know, I think a lot of the members in the academy really learn best through story. So maybe you can kind of take us back to the beginning. But talk to us a little bit about the beginning stages of you playing baseball. How did you get introduced in the game? How old did you start? And let's talk a little bit about that first.
Yeah, I've played baseball since as long as I can remember. I don't really remember the first time picking up a bat, but right. I think when I was four and I went to SeaWorld, they did like this dolphin show, and I like ran up on the stage and hit off a dolphin throwing a wiffle ball. So it's been in me for a long time. As long as I know, really. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what triggered it or why it became a passion, but it certainly has.
Yeah, yeah. So, so you don't remember specifically when you started playing baseball, but did you play like travel ball? Did you just start with T-ball, or did you start more like coach pitch?
Yeah, I started. I had an older brother, so okay. When he was six, I was four, and they let me play on the team. So I was always around the older kids.
Yeah,
and I just wanted to play. I always wanted to be on the field. Baseball is kind of like where I feel like myself the most,
right?
Like on the field. So I've always just gravitated towards it. And yeah, I played, you know, my town league, All-Stars, started playing I went to Cooperstown Dreams Park the first year it ever existed. I think that was 96. So came up through the AAU, played high school in Legion, then played some college ball at the University of Vermont.
Okay.
And some independent ball as well.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So, you know, one of the questions that I kind of get asked a lot, I give private lessons here in Long Beach, and, you know, when we talk about approach, I see, you know, the hashtag process. What would you say is your general approach? So if somebody were to ask you, what's your approach? What are the first things that a hitter needs to understand? How would you kind of communicate that to a hitter?
I think that depends on the age. Mm-hmm. With younger kids, I think it's important just to foster passion for the game and really help them learn the game and understand how the game works, because I feel like too many kids are being told how to play. So like the coach is telling, hey, swing at this pitch, take two steps to your left on defense, throw here. So the kids aren't really learning how to play the game. They're not learning how to think with the game. And it's like getting told to clean your room. Kids don't like being told what to do. They need to learn how to play the game so they can become passionate about it. So that's like with younger kids, That's my primary concern.
Right.
With older, more serious players, for me, process means just being truly professional about yourself as a player. So Taking care of all the details that matter towards your performance and your career. So hitting specifically, it's understanding your swing, understanding how your body works, And paying attention to the pitcher that day.
Yeah.
You know, paying attention to what pitches they throw and what counts with runners in scoring position, stuff like that. So just understanding what you need to do on a daily basis and being consistent.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And so when somebody asks you, you know, how are you involved in the game now, what do you typically say?
I say I teach hitters about their swing.
Right.
Whether that's a young player or a major league all-star, really the same thing.
Yeah.
I help them understand how they're moving and how the swing can help them perform better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, bodily awareness is definitely key. I was looking at your website, and I saw a picture of you with Chris Colabello. We actually had him on the show. He came on and he spoke to us about his journey, you know, from not getting drafted out of high school, playing indie ball, and then, you know, getting drafted or signing as a free agent from indie ball and then making it to the big leagues. It's very rare that you see a position player take that route and make it to that high of a level. What are some things that you've seen in his swing that some of the members in the Quality Bats Academy could learn to recognize and implement their own approach?
Yeah, so the biggest thing, first of all, Chris is a tremendous hitter. He always has been,
right,
always will be. Yeah. He has a, we call it hitterish. He's got a knack for getting the barrel on the ball, hitting line drives.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that we work on is understanding the barrel path.
Okay.
And a lot of people will ask me, am I an approach guy or a mechanics guy?
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be like this divide that you got to be one or you got to be the other. We're kind of the belief that the approach is tied to your mechanics. So
right.
When somebody says like, oh, you got to get ready early, the movement that you do early is your mechanics.
Yeah.
So you can't separate, what you're thinking from what you're doing, because the swing is actually determining what you're able to do for whether it's pitch location, pitch speed, changing speeds. It's all tied together. So with Chris, when you watch his barrel path, I have an article on my website that kind of chronicles his swing changes. And he went from, he used to be a cliche, kind of get your foot down early, mm-hmm. knob to the ball, squish the bug kind of guy. He never had the ability to drive the ball out to the opposite field.
Especially for power, yeah.
For power, yeah. So now that's really a big part of the game. And what that did was it made him more dynamic as a hitter. Mm-hmm. It made it so that he was harder to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're facing the pitching that he faces on a regular basis, you need to be as dynamic as possible, and as you have to cover your holes as much as you can, because the pitchers split it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's fun to watch. I mean, he's a very simple, quiet hitter. There's not a lot going on, which is something that you don't necessarily see all the time. I mean, you see, you know, I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm starting to see a lot of guys, especially at the major league level, swinging out of their shoes a little bit, trying to go for the long ball. They have a leg kick, they have a bigger stride. And I think, you know, what happens is a lot of kids see that on TV and they want to do it themselves. So Chris is a really good example of a guy who just kind of quiets it down, slow feet, fast hands, quiet head, like Spring talks about. That's awesome. So when a kid asks you, or he's struggling, okay, and he says, what should he focus on? Would you recommend really kind of getting to the root of the approach or the physical mechanics? Or is that something that you actually just have to see first by watching him swing, maybe seeing some live at-bats first?
Yeah. Number one, you got to understand where you are in your season and in the scope of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
If you're in season, my number one question is, how are you seeing the ball?
Yeah.
Most of the time, I ask that question to a hitter that's struggling, they're not seeing the ball well, which tells me they're either just not looking in the right place at the right time, or they're rushing, they're moving incorrectly, they're not preparing their body for a pitch release.
Right.
So every pitcher takes their arm back to throw the ball. Baseball,
right.
Softball, they do the full windmill. So there's a lot of time that you could use before the ball is out to get yourself ready.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the number one mistake I see with younger players. They just stand there and they wait for the ball to come out. They don't kind of dance with the pitcher.
They don't have a rhythm. Yeah.
Yeah. No rhythm. So, if there's some overwhelming physical things going on with the swing,
mm-hmm.
I think you need to address that on a daily basis. It's not make a decision one day. Okay. I'm going to swing differently. That's not how your mind works. That's not how your body's going to respond to a pitch. So you have to go about it and have if you're seeking advice about what changes to make, video is a great tool. You talked a little bit just a minute ago about kids emulating leg kicks and stuff. I love emulation.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a very powerful tool. The best hitters are the best for a reason.
Right.
And a lot of hitters gravitate towards a leg kick because it feels athletic and it is something you have to do early.
Yeah.
But try it. If it works for you, that's great. If it doesn't, you don't need to do it.
Right.
It's a style thing. It doesn't.
Right. It does help to get the body going, especially if a kid doesn't have a rhythm. Yeah. Hey, maybe try the leg kick. I think what I've been able to gather is that hitters fall into trouble when they have that leg kick, but they're not able to stay back. They're not able to keep that head back. And so they're making 80 look like 85. So, but yeah, there are pros and cons to a leg kick or to emulating a big leaguer.
Yeah, you said keep the head back, and I have to address that.
Okay. Yeah.
The head movement does happen.
Okay. A little bit, but not too much.
The hitter that has the most head movement that I've ever seen on video is Hank Aaron. Aaron had crazy, crazy forward move.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is more if the hands are coming forward versus just if you just stay back, then there's no way. Imagine a pitcher just hanging back and not having their head move forward.
Right.
So there is some style factor. A lot of hitters, their head goes down. A lot of hitters, their head will go forward. Some hitters go forward and down. Look at like Dustin Pedroia.
Yeah, you're right.
He starts pretty tall and he works forward and down. So the key is understanding what the hands are doing and even more importantly, how the barrel is moving. And there's like an element of resistance of controlling and countering that move forward. So
okay.
if there's like a lunge happening and there's a drift forward,
mm-hmm.
staying back can be a very poor term to use because hitters will just literally hang back on their back leg and not shift their weight.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of hitters will go from, if you're a right-handed batter, they'll go from weight on the right side to weight on the left side.
Right.
And that's usually a bad thing because then you're shifting from one leg to the other. It's more about taking your weight from here and moving your weight here. It's not about going right side to left side. It's about the whole body moving.
Right.
So I'm trying to be as simple as possible, but
right.
I don't like when people are negative towards head movement forward because right. it just doesn't happen. And for most hitters, it makes them unathletic and makes it very hard for them to drive the ball.
Okay, interesting. So would this be another way to explain it? Having a little bit of head movement is okay as long as you can hit against a stiff or firm front half. Is that another way to kind of explain it?
I would shy away from that too.
Really? Okay, interesting. Okay.
When you understand the pelvic movement,
uh-huh.
the front hip will kind of pull back and the whole tailbone will kind of work back towards the backstop,
mm-hmm.
and that's gonna make the front leg straighten.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if you're doing it well with your lower body, you don't really need to think about a stiff front side.
Mm-hmm.
That will just happen.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you'll see there's the leg will lock out and then bend again right after contact.
Right.
So if a lot of time where hitters like lock it out and stay locked,
mm-hmm.
for me that's a red flag that they're using their body and kind of forcing their swing too much.
Right. Right. Okay. Interesting. Let's talk about pitch selection. Let's say a kid has decent mechanics. He feels pretty good walking up to the plate. There's not a lot going on. What are some things some checkpoints or some thought processes that he needs to be aware of every time he steps into the batter's box? I know the game's going to dictate that in terms of approach, but what's the general, what would you say the general theme is?
Be ready to hit. Mm-hmm. From pitch number one. That's too many kids take pitches early in counts and fall behind. When you look at the numbers between hitting with less than two strikes versus hitting with two strikes,
mm-hmm.
it's like at the big league level, it's an automatic 100-point shift.
Right.
If you hit with less than two strikes, you hit 300. If you hit with two strikes, you hit less than 200. So hit ahead in the count as much as possible. Most of the time at the big league level, guys get in trouble when they foul off pitches that they're supposed to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be ready to go. You have to be anticipating swing. I know Spring likes to talk about, hunting pitches, and I think that's a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be guys that you face that are really, really good, and you have to pick a pitch that you're trying to hit.
Right.
It's not common that you have to pick one pitch, but there are going to be times where you have to pick one pitch and really just sit on it because their other stuff's so good.
Yeah.
Other pitchers that you face, you can feel really comfortable and you feel like you can hit anything.
Yeah.
I know a lot of kids are told not to swing at breaking balls, but if a guy hangs a breaking ball over the middle, you got to do some damage
because mm-hmm.
that is not a – it shouldn't be forced to right field and it shouldn't be guided or like – kids are told hit it to right field or hit it to the opposite field because it makes them wait.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy's hanging a breaking ball over the inner third.
Pull it, yeah.
Go ahead and yank it. Pull it, drive it.
Yeah.
It's a good pitch to hit. If it's in the zone, jump on it.
Yeah.
Too many kids are patient and sit back. I would also say situationally, understand how many outs in the situation. There's times where it can almost be better to take a strikeout than forcing contact on a breaking ball and rolling into a double play.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding, you know, if there's guys on first and second and no outs, rolling into a forcing contact to put a ball in play,
mm-hmm.
just to ground into double play isn't a good thing. So it's understanding the sequence and where the game is at.
Right. What would you say in terms of approach, looking for something up in the zone plays? So let's say there's a guy who's he's able to locate his secondary pitch. Let's say he's a fastball slider type guy. Yeah. He's locating both pitches. All right, and he's tough. He's in a groove. He's in a rhythm. Where would looking for something up in the zone play in terms of fastball up in the zone or if he hangs a slider up in the zone?
Yeah, that it really is going to depend on what the pitch is and understanding starting point versus finish point of the pitch.
Okay.
So I think it's important not just to look at looking up in the zone, but pay attention to how your teammates are missing.
So interesting. Okay.
If your team is grounding everything out, ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, right. The guy's probably got some sink on his pitch, and he's getting on the bottom of the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, just from an accuracy standpoint, he's missing on he's making hitters miss.
Right.
Over the ball. If a guy is getting tons of pop-ups and fly balls, then we're going to need to set our sights higher on the pitch. So it's not just looking up or looking down or looking in or out, but paying attention given whoever's on the mound and teammates are missing. And then you can be more educated about how you're going to look. And then there's going to be times, Chris has told me that major league sinkers, he's aiming a foot under the ball.
Oh, wow.
He's aiming a foot. And that's just to like not hit a foul ball off his foot.
Right.
Guys just throwing these power sinkers. So
incredible.
You know, at the same time, if a guy's throwing 97 up in the zone, you better be thinking, get on top.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean swing down. It just means accuracy-wise, you need to be higher than you think.
Yeah, yeah. Very nice. You know, we do have a portion of the members who are in the recruiting process, all right? So they're a junior, senior in high school. What should they be thinking about? What do you recommend they think about in terms of setting themselves apart from other prospects, as well as positioning themselves as a player who can compete and add value to a baseball program at the next level?
Number one, take care of your academics.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be the lowest maintenance player possible to a college coach. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want any trouble in the classroom, off the field. He doesn't want any drama. He doesn't want any BS that he has to handle outside of baseball duties. So the more you can be low maintenance, and that's making good habits in the classroom and making good decisions socially.
Yeah.
That's number one. In terms of baseball skills, be as good as you can possibly be and assume that you're not good. Not to be not confident, but I just see so many kids, you go to these games in high schools and they're like, they got their Evo shields and their sleeves and their shin guards. It's like, you're not even facing a sinker guy and you've got a shin guard on. You wear a shin guard in high school? That tells me you're not accurate. Like, you shouldn't be balled off your shin in high school.
Right.
Like, if I'm going to a game and I look at a kid with a shin guard on, I'm like, you're telling me you're not good.
That's true. That's a good point.
Kids are so concerned about looking cool and like having swag and all this. Shut up and play and be the best player in the field. Kids need to – a lot of kids, I feel like the idea of playing in college. They think they know what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a grind. It's not glory. It's not it's early mornings in the weight room. It's travel. It's brutal in the classroom. It's a struggle. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of kids think it's just going to be fun and it's like, oh, I'm going to play in college. It's going to be great. They like the idea of it. I'm from the Northeast. I tell kids all the time, you want to play in college? Go out to a game on a Sunday morning when it's snowing.
Oh.
When it snowed this week up here.
Oh, that's brutal.
Go to a college game. There's 12 people there, and it's mostly parents. It's not fun.
Yeah, I don't envy that at all.
It's not this glorious, like, college World Series environment. You got to really love the game, and there's a huge dedication level and a lot of sacrifices to make that happen. And I think a lot of kids don't realize that. They just they're so concerned about getting exposure and going to showcases, and they spend so much time and money trying to get seen that they're not even working on getting better.
Right. Yeah. There's no foundation. Yeah. They're focusing on the things that aren't really going to support and sustain them long term in terms of their baseball career. Yeah.
So just be as good as you can be. Understand what your body language is saying. I think that's a huge one, because a lot of times players they're not aware of how bad they look on the field. Mm-hmm. They make it out and they're slumping over and slamming helmets and throwing bats or making gestures, and shut up and play.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, a lot of these recruiters, they're masters at being able to read body language. I remember us reading an article, I can't remember what head D1 coach, but he said that his recruiting process when he's out vetting players starts when he watches the players walk off the bus. He wants to see how you carry yourself, what your routine is pre-game, and then when the game starts, he doesn't even want to see you succeed. He wants to see you fail, because he wants to see how you respond. I think a lot of players take that part for granted, and they lose out on that opportunity to kind of show, hey, I can handle adversity. I got another question. This is actually a common theme. How would you recommend a player best deal with a hitting instructor or a coach who is giving contradicting advice, or advice that's just absolutely flat out wrong? I can give you an example. I have a player that I work with, and one of the things that he recommends is, there's two things. He wants the hitter, when he separates, for the bat to be angled behind the head, which is a little bit of a wrap, and he wants all of the weight on the front foot. And as they rotate on their back foot. Right? So as they rotate their swing shifts on their back foot, thinking that you're developing torque from that process. I mean, I can kind of get what he's saying there.
Sure.
But obviously I always say, if you want proof of whether or not this works or not, just watch a big league game. Are there guys at the big league level doing it? I can't think of anybody who sits on their front foot and rotates. The first guy I can kind of think of is like Coco Crisp. I know there was a little bit of a weight shift, and then he kind of rotated. But how would you recommend a kid deal with this, you know, unorthodox approach to hitting, when all he wants to do is keep things simple and kind of leverage his own strengths?
So it's like a high school coach, you don't have an option type situation?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Hit.
Yeah. Produce.
Have success. Yeah. Success most of the time will quiet things down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shift happening. It's currently ongoing.
Okay.
With mindsets and beliefs, and people are a lot more accepting now than they have been in the past.
Okay.
There's too much video available
on YouTube. Yeah.
On YouTube, anywhere. You could see how many people have an iPhone in their pocket. They could take it out and film you at 240 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to a game and there's people in the stands taking video. There's just too much video available for people to continue to push really poor information, because there is a lot of poor information out there. In terms of dealing with a coach like that, it's tough. If you're trying to play for your school, you have to be respectful to your coach.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. I would like to think that you could have an honest conversation with your coach. And if you're knowledgeable yourself, and you've educated yourself about the swing, and you have good answers for why you're doing something, I'd like to think you could have an honest, rational conversation and not be confrontational, because that would not end well.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to run into guys that you can't get through. You can't change their minds, and sometimes you just have to wear it. I know in our part of the country, high school seasons are only 18 games, so it's not that tough of a pill to swallow.
Right.
It can be painful if you're trying to win, you're trying to compete, and somebody's forcing you to do something that you know is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I always recommend just try to have an honest conversation. If it goes nowhere, you have a choice to make. You can either do it their way or not play.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I recommended that he did was that when the coach is giving him advice, try to look as attentive as possible. Yes, sir. No, sir. Shake your head like you understand. Maybe even ask a question. Because what you really want to do is you want to make sure that he believes that you're coachable, so that, when he's not looking, you can kind of go back to your approach.
Sure.
So I kind of feel like, if a coach is convinced that you're buying in, he'll pay less attention to you. Less attention he pays to you, the more you can kind of feel comfortable, get back to what you're doing. So you're not being micromanaged. But, what you said, it hit it right on the nail. You got to be respectful. Whether you agree with him or not, you got to be respectful for him and to the program. And then having that honest conversation, knowing your swing better than he does, and being able to have good answers, like you said, I think that's key as well.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Some of my pro guys will play the ego game, and they'll take their swing and say, "Man, that thing you told me about, I just tried it right there. It felt really good. I don't know what it looked like, but I felt really good." And they're taking their normal swing, but telling them, "Oh, that thing you told me, oh, that felt great." So just stuck to ego a little bit.
A little mind games.
Yeah, because then they're like, "Well, he's telling me that he tried what I was saying. Didn't look right, but he hit the ball well."
Right.
Don't say it on a rollover, but
hit
a ball hard somewhere. Yeah, but
that felt good, Coach.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Great. Cool. Who are some this season has been pretty interesting. There's been a lot of long balls, a lot of really good games in 2016. Who are some guys that players? Some younger guys that players could really look out for. I know Carrera is probably, he's up there. He's amazing. Would you say he's at the top of the list?
He's fun to watch.
Yeah.
He's, I asked somebody last year, who's gonna go down as a better player, Alex Rodriguez or Carlos Correa? And the fact that that's even a question is a huge statement.
That's true, yeah.
It's not even, you don't even need to answer it. The fact that you can pose that type of question is unreal. I saw a stat the other day that I think through the first 100 games in his career, I think he had like 23 homers, and it's the next closest was A-Rod at 16. So he's like, he's already on a better pace.
Well, he makes the game look so small and so effortless. I mean, I think the size and the sheer power that he brings to the game, he does kind of make it look effortless. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes down as a better ball
player. I didn't realize how big he was last year.
Yeah, I know. He's huge. I think
6'4".
6'4", 220, something like that.
Yeah.
Incredible. Is he fast? Like, is he
plays like he's like 5'11", 6 feet tall. The way he moves, he just doesn't move like a big guy.
Yeah, he probably could have played in the NFL. He's just such an athletic guy.
Yeah.
Who's another guy that you'd recommend?
I mean, Cabrera. You got to look at Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah, Cabrera's solid. Yeah.
Joey Votto's fun one to watch. Mm-hmm. I have the MLB package, MLB TV. I highly recommend it to people because you get to watch guys hit. And Votto and Buster Posey are my two favorite in terms of just watching their at-bats and watching them grind and work through pitches. Those two guys are really, really fun to watch. Another young guy is Mookie Betts with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
I really enjoy. I saw him last year in a spring training game, and he was just fun. He's fun to watch play the game. He puts pressure on the defense. He's an explosive player. He's fast. He's not big. He's a really fun player to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Okay.
So those would be some guys to look out. The Franco kid on the Phillies,
Mikel Franco.
Yeah, he might surprise
people. Yeah, that's one guy I've been telling people.
I don't know if he's going to hit for average.
Maybe 270, 275, 280.
But he's got some good actions with his barrel. And I don't think a lot of people really pay attention because the Phillies haven't been good.
Yeah, yeah.
His spring was
solid. Yeah. I think he's a potential Gold Glove winner also. Okay, well, I got a couple more questions to ask you. I want to talk a little bit about tooth hitting. I see hashtag process in the background. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's my website that I do most of my stuff through right now.
Okay.
The primary motivation is to help hitters and help hitters really understand their swing. And it's really an ongoing process. So, like, my process is I study video all the time, and I'm always trying to find different wording, different feels, different drills. I don't even like the word drills. It's more like experimenting and just searching for ways to communicate to hitters. Mm-hmm. And my biggest thing on there is my book about swing mechanics. And it really, the goal with that is to be able to communicate to hitters ways to understand the swing and communicate that hitters really have a choice with how they swing a bat. I find that most hitters don't realize there's different ways. They're just doing what they're told. Mm-hmm. And when you get exposed to the information, it really forces you to be aware of differences and choices that you have as a hitter.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any maybe key frameworks that you might be able to kind of share with them to kind of get them excited, or like a primer to the Tukes hitting method or the Tukes hitting philosophies?
Well, first of all, it's not my method. It's
right.
The game tells us it works.
Right.
So essentially there's three types of swings. There's a swing where the hitter will push at the ball. They'll push with their upper body. There's a pull, which is more of like shoulders and like a rotation. Mm-hmm. And then there's in what I call the elite pattern. And I called it elite. I wish I'd called it something different because everything, like elite 8-year-old teams now. So it's the word elite played out. I called it elite because it's what the best hitters do. And the way the book works is there's different characteristics that happen in any swing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a depth, there's a plane, there's a direction, there's a length. And when you understand the different patterns, and these are like the most common patterns that you see with hitters, when you understand how the body works and how the bat works, you can really attack your own swing and learn how to move better to give yourself a better chance to compete.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really breaking down the swing and helping identify the best way to go about swinging a bat.
Right.
It's a key difference between baseball and something like golf. Golf, you can swing any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's making contact with the ball. It's managing a face and path. In baseball, there's a timing constraint.
Mm-hmm.
The pitcher is going to have varied speeds. Sometimes the speed is going to be very overwhelming velocity.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have changing speeds, changing locations, changing movements. So that's, you have to prepare your swing to handle all of those things. And when you understand how the best hitters of all time have done it, like I said earlier, you kind of have a choice to make. If all the best hitters are doing it this way,
mm-hmm.
and you're not,
right,
it's probably something to consider at the very least.
Fantastic. All right, Bobby, I really appreciate your time. For the Quality Bat members, if they wanted to reach out to you or learn more about your stuff, your programs, what is the best way to go about doing that?
The website is tukeshitting.com.
Okay.
And then there's a contact page on that website that if they want to get in touch with me directly, that'd
Perfect.
Be the best way.
Are you on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook?
Yep. Twitter is, everything's Tukes Hitting.
Okay, perfect.
So T-E-W-K-S Hitting. Twitter, I'm fairly active on there. Facebook, I have a page, but I don't really do much with it.
Okay.
I have an Instagram page. Twitter is where I'm most active.
Got it. Okay, yeah, we'll make sure that we link all that down below. Bobby, thank you so much. If you could give just one more piece of advice to the quality bat members who want to play baseball. You know, they want to reach their true potential. They want to make the game fun again, and they want to play at the highest level of baseball. What's your one piece of advice?
Mindset is critical. I was very fortunate this offseason. I got to be around some really high-level players, all-stars, potential Hall of Famers. And the thing that really stood out to me was their mindset, their expectations for where they were going to be in life, and their performance was really, really special to witness. Mm-hmm. So have a mindset. Even a guy like Chris, even throughout his 7 years, he always believed he was a Major League Baseball player. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be a college player, if you want to be a starter on your varsity team, no matter where you want to be, establish a mindset that that's what you're going to be. Right. And don't let people tell you any different. Don't let people knock you down. Be real with yourself about what you need to work on. But have that mindset and visualize it and attack it.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Bobby. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
All right.
Nice talking to you. All right. Take care.